You are listening to Teacher Talk here on KillRadio.org.
The line it is drawn, and the curse it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast. And the present now will later be past. And the order is rapidly fading. And the first one now will later be last. For the times they are a change.
I'm Mark Hemphill. I'm in for Nick Richard for, last week, this week, and as many as three more weeks. It's still Teacher Talk on KillRadio.org. Same call-in numbers, 213-252-0998. We have several speakers scheduled for today. First would be John Amati, and probably followed by John Adams. If you're not familiar with John Amati, he's a very familiar activist in our area, associated with groups like RAC LA, which is food distribution. In fact, right about now, I imagine he's in Santa Monica picking up bread to distribute later on today. We hope to be in contact with him around 12:30 or so, with any luck at all. What I wanted to start off with here is reviewing a couple of things that we discussed last week. As you remember, I mentioned to you that Lenny Eisenberg, the editor of PerDaily.com, and I attended a meeting at the California Museum of African History, not last Saturday, but the Saturday before, in which the speaker was Ramon Cortinas. As you may recall, if you were listening, Lenny challenged him openly, and as a result, changed the demeanor of that actual presentation. Now, we have a story out on that on PerDaily.com. So if you would like all the details on that and just to know more about it and exactly what was said, you can look it up on PerDaily.com, and it is the lead story. A couple of other things going on that relate to that. If you recall, Linda Everhart also spoke with us last week. She ran for UTLA president, that would be the United Teachers of Los Angeles, under the SAVE banner, which is a political action group of sorts in education and in other areas. The SAVE has produced a DVD, a video basically, titled What LAUSD and UTLA Don't Want You to Know. It's a new DVD documentary, and it goes into detail about corruption within the district, within the union, and collusion between the two. There are many speakers there. Everything is said clearly and bluntly, so if you're ready to learn what you didn't know, it would be a good idea to give that DVD a try. I haven't done that myself yet, but I can tell you this. If you contact Francisco Martinez, and that would be at fmartin6@yahoo.com, he can forward a copy to you. Again, that's fmartin6@yahoo.com. You can also contact neil1947@sbcglobal.net. That would be neil1947@sbcglobal.net, and they'll forward a copy of the DVD to you. Something else important in the news. Earlier this weekend anyway, information was released on the Parent Trigger. Their spokesman, I believe his name is Austin, made a statement that there is an article from the Parent Revolution in which it is stated that the state board has upheld and approved the following from the Parent Trigger. If you're not familiar with the Parent Trigger, the overall goal of it is to provide selection in schools for parents in regard to their children. However, it also distinctly moves toward privatizations and charters. So it is more or less like a point man for charters and privatization. What this accomplishes, as approved by the judge that oversaw this, is that they ban harassment and intimidation of parents organizing around the parent trigger. They ban the use of school resources to campaign for or against the parent trigger. They create a model petition so that no future parent trigger petition will ever be thrown out due to a technicality. So almost anything they put up, I guess, will go through. They provide every parent at all 1,300 parent trigger eligible schools in California with notice about the law and their rights under the law. So this is going out to all of them privately. They create common sense signature verification procedures and timelines and mandate that no legitimate signature shall ever be thrown out based on technicality. So again, as long as you submit, you can't get hung up. They empower parents to choose their charter or in-district reform partner, which would probably be a privatization, through a transparent and public parent-led RFP process after the parents have won the organizing campaign. RFP, I think, stands for Request for Proposal. Anyway, as it says, guarantees them the ability to select any school they want within their area. And lastly, the parent-led RFP process after the parents have won the organizing campaign and they reject CTA's, the California Teachers Association, outrageous proposal, as they put it, that teachers be given veto power over the parent trigger. So this is another major move towards successfully instituting privatizations and charters throughout the school system. Of course, there is no mention of the failure rate in improvement among charters and privatizations, which seems to becoming more and more outstanding over time. But again, that's not mentioned at all. Finally, next week our speaker will be Neil Chertkoff. Neil is he's an activist in so many directions. I can't even begin to list them. He's involved in all sorts of groups that include socialism, labor movements, and education. So he too will be a very interesting in studio guest, in that you'll be able to phone in and question him on what he says, what his views are, and where he sees things going. And that would be the updated news for the time. So I think what we'll do is wait and see if we hear from John Amani immediately. If not, we can always hope that John Adams will call in lieu, and we can discuss what he's doing over the air. So let's listen to a little more music and give a caller time to call in.
Up in the morning, out on a job, work like the devil for my pay, while that lucky old son got nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. Fuss with my woman, toil for my kids, sweat till I'm wrinkled and gray, while that lucky old son got nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. Good Lord up above, can't you hear me crying tears all in my eyes? Send down that cloud with your silvery lining, lift me to paradise. Oh, show me that river take me across, wash all my troubles away. Like that lucky old sun, give me nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. Like that lucky old sun, give me nothing to do but roll around heaven all day.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed the music selections. We'll have Linda Everhart calling in here in a few minutes to give us some more information regarding the Save DVD. And I think she can tell you a lot more about it than I can. All I know are there are some well-known personalities in the area that participated in the making of the DVD. But the details hopefully will be forthcoming from Linda. Let's wait and see.
All right, Mark. So you are a retired teacher, correct?
Correct.
And why are you still interested in what happens to other teachers? Shouldn't a retired teacher be saying, I'm glad to get the hell out of this?
Oh, well, let me explain that to you. Given my choice, I would rather be sitting around sipping sour mash bourbon, preferably 100 proof, or else pouring a high-grade Barbados or Haitian rum into a latte and smoking a hand-rolled cigar. Apparently, my peers aren't willing to play along with that. They haven't been cooperative. What it comes down to is this, Bennett. Things need to get done, so they call upon people whom they know have a reputation for getting things done.
They're calling you.
Yeah, so it's been a really great retirement. So far, I've spent more time doing this. It's almost equivalent to teaching, to be honest with you. It just never ends.
But, hey, you're not an assistant principal.
No, I didn't qualify. I think, what was the first qualification? You had to be a jackass. You know, that helps a lot. And you have to be someone who's willing to give up your entire life. And you have to be willing to do all the dirty work. You know, an assistant principal is, generally speaking, now like being a hitman. Whoever they tell you to go after, you go after them. You collect documentation on what they're doing and try and prove what they're doing is wrong. If you can't find the documentation, you set up circumstances, which the rest of us would call entrapment, but the LA Unified would call documentation.
So you've actually thought about this.
Oh, well, I spent a lot of time on it. I don't want to get into any details on it, but at least once a week I get a call from somebody who's basically lost their job. In other words, they've been targeted by the district. Usually we're talking about veteran teachers, and by that I mean people who are at the upper end of the pay scale. They're closing in on retirement, and if they're there long enough, they're going to walk out with lifetime benefits, which are very, very expensive. The district does not want to pay them. So the best thing to do in the process of thinning the herd is to get them out of it. In other words, eliminate that chance you're going to have to pay those lifetime benefits and kill that top-end salary. Because for that top-end salary, I can bring in two teachers.
Well, how long do you have to be there in order to get those lifetime benefits?
20 years.
So you had 25 years, 28 years?
I had altogether about 28 years, but most of them with LA Unified, not all of them with LA Unified. And LA Unified is one of the fewer of the districts which offer the potential for lifetime benefits. The rest don't do that. You probably have a co-pay or a COBRA system or something like that, which would be very expensive.
I mention this because I have a cousin who's a teacher up in Alaska. I was on the phone with him last week, and he wants to retire. He's been teaching for 30 years in Alaska, teaching grade and high school. And he doesn't, but the problem is his pension is less than 50% of his drawing salary. And so he doesn't want to retire yet because there's not enough money in it for him to live comfortably after he retires.
Well, I can speak to that in this sense. In Los Angeles, the system is that you put in your 20 years and you have basically qualified for the single highest year in salary. If you retire prior to that 20 years, they average the three highest years, so you wind up with less. Now, I don't know how it operates in Alaska, but it's probably some similar process. And from the information you're giving me, he's obviously consulted his state teacher's retirement system there, and he knows what he's looking at. It's awfully demanding to put in 30 years and only be looking at 50% of your salary.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone who could successfully get away with that as far as survival goes at the level they're used to, unless they've put a lot of money into voluntary retirement. And that's the other option that teachers have. You can go into tax-sheltered annuities, even open stock market purchases under a sheltered annuity, which means you pay no taxes on what you buy or what it accrues until you actually declare retirement. And then whatever comes of it afterward, in other words, any dividends or profits after that time become taxable. Now, you know, if you're smart, well, it's not really a case if you're smart. I shouldn't say that. Get things being what they are. If you can afford to do that, you can do that. Now, I don't know how it exists in other states, but I know in California, it's a strange proportion that they use in determining this. And what it comes down to is this. I found that while I was still working, that I could give up $1,000 of my salary into a voluntary retirement and still walk out with the same basic net pay with a small variation because of the fact that it reduced my tax rate. So I was pretty good on that. Now, that should be the same sort of situation that would apply to your friend. The problem with it is this. If he started doing this 20 years ago, great. If he's just looking at it now, you would have to have an awful lot of cash to throw at it.
I don't know what his cash situation is, but he's a teacher in Alaska. Hey, we got a caller. This is what we've been looking for.
Hello, Linda.
Hello.
How you doing?
Okay.
Now, the reason you're calling in, this is by a request on my part, and I thank you for fulfilling that request. We talked a little about the Save DVD, and as I understand it, you haven't seen it either.
No, I picked up 11 of them yesterday with my meeting with Save, but I haven't had a chance to view it yet. But I do know who is on it.
Can you run down that list for us?
Okay, Dr. John Fernandez.
Now, he is a longtime writer in education, isn't he?
Yes, he also was. He also ran for the school board unsuccessfully.
That's right. In fact, quite a few people were contesting the conditions under which he somehow wound up not having a favorable set of circumstances to campaign under.
Yeah, UTLA promoted him at first and then backed away, and he was very upset. I think it was over some legal issues, but they wouldn't even let him explain or show him documentation. They just shut him out.
Yeah, and the fact is that he's not a longtime union crony.
No, that's probably more of an issue than anything else.
Yeah,
okay.
He's more than likely to question policy and procedure and ask for justification or accountability.
Well, that is the issue with all of these people that are on the DVD.
Yeah, who else is on there?
David Garcia, who you've had on the show.
Yeah, in fact, he does co-host with us, but I don't think he'll be back next week, but the following week. However, David experienced the same oddities in his campaign, very similar to what you experienced, and that you were basically shut out.
Oh, okay. David Garcia sent us a bunch of us an email yesterday, and I will say what he said, he said that the new leadership are proudly brandishing their new weapons of leadership, and then they're smugly depositing them back in their scabbards. So they're making a show of action, but we haven't seen any action yet.
Yeah, I read that too, and I think the bottom line is exactly what you're saying, that there's all the talk, all the dialogue, but virtually no plan of action, no description of who's going to do what, no station at which to get on board, or anything else like that. So far, it's just identifying the problems and saying we have to do something about it, and then nothing else.
Kind of Shades of Duffy, huh?
Shades of Duffy, and I'd say goes beyond that. It's business as usual. It's like he never stepped out.
Yeah, the M.O., the same M.O.
Yeah, the thing about Duffy was this, and this certainly is no vindication of the man's two terms as president, is that at least he was verbal.
Yeah, we haven't heard anything yet, although a lot of people would say, well, they've just been in office since July 1st. So, and it's the summertime, and I know they're going to be out of town this next week, but we still haven't heard anything from them.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they're going out of town for.
Correct me on this, Linda. Aren't they paid year-round?
Yes, they are.
So isn't it their job to disseminate information, literature, over the web or whatever they need to us on an ongoing basis? I mean, that was my impression.
Yeah, and they're concerned about spending money, but it doesn't cost them any money to put things on the UTLA website.
Yeah, I see you learned a lot during your campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Not all the good, but you did learn a lot. Who else is on the list?
Ron Goetjes.
Now, I'm not familiar with Ron. What exactly is he? What does he do? What does he play?
I think he's in the Hispanic caucus, but Francisco knows more about him and has been more in contact. I don't know what else to say about Ron Goetjes, but he is very clear on Hispanic issues and the Hispanic children within the district, which are the majority of them.
Any chance you could get some contact information on Ron to me, because I would certainly like to get in touch with him in respect to Kill Radio, because he sounds like he has a lot of the 411 on exactly what we're trying to talk about. And again, as you're saying, this is a district that's overwhelmingly Latino, and they're not exactly getting top-end education.
No, they are not. And they're not prime movers to be put into the charter schools either, who do not want children that are second language learners.
Yeah, so I think that might be a valuable contact there. And one thing about Latinos is they do come out when it's important.
Yes. Yes, they're very concerned for their children.
Very much so. Who else is on the list then?
John Imani Daniels.
Well, John should be speaking to us today. He's affiliated mostly with food distribution and a number of other progressive organizations in the area. In fact, too much for me to really get into. I'll have to depend on him to clarify that for us, because there's so much going on there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then Neil Shurtoff.
Neil.
My colleague.
Yeah,
Neil. At Supporter of Save.
Yeah, sort of like the juggernaut of the World Wide Web.
A lot of people are very upset with him, but then truth tellers always do.
Yeah, especially when you got one who loves a fight, a good fight.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, all he has to do is get started, and okay, away we go. It's on.
Yes, he was on the Peak Yahoo group, or Google, either Google or Yahoo, and they finally kicked him off because he was saying too many things they didn't want to hear.
Oh, yeah, well, but Neil's been attacked more times than the Octomom, you know. So, I mean, he's pretty much used to it. And of course, he's not below stooping to their level and handing them back the same sort of language. So.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, we're laughing at it now, but it's not so funny when it's on the web.
Oh, but those are the ones that are on this video. Now, Francisco is preparing another one. And the one thing that we didn't have on this video was any women. But that's going to be corrected in the next video.
Yeah, well, we should mention that Francisco Martinez of KPFK is the one who actually engineered all of this.
Yes, he is our He is our media expert. And, yes, he's got his own program on KPFK.
Yeah, he's got his own program, and he has his own website, too, doesn't he? A forum of sorts?
Oh, yes, LAUSD Teachers.
All right, and what is the title of his program on KPFK?
Oh, it's on Tuesday nights. Now, I'm not sure what time it is.
It's Latino something, though, isn't it?
Yes, it's all in Spanish.
All right, well, that should describe a good share of our potential audience, so no loss there. That's good. Well, maybe we can also get Francisco to one day depart from his child rearing long enough to give us a little information about himself and what he's doing and how he operates on KPFK and how he wound up getting involved in the DVD and, you know, all sorts of things like that, because Francisco has also had his share of confrontations on the World Wide Web.
Oh, yes, he has. And of course, he ran for secondary vice president in the citywide elections for UTLA.
And he gave him a close call, too.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, that's something to say there. But one last thing. Whose idea was the video?
Francisco's.
Oh, Francisco's. And he announced that it's your weekly Saturday meetings, or how did that turn?
Yes, he says, yeah, I think we need to do a video. We need to get more information out there. I think a lot of people thought that after the elections were over that SAVE was going to fade into the distance, but it was not about winning elections. It was about fighting corruption, about getting information out to the public.
Yeah, and I would like to mention here, too, that listeners would have no way of knowing, but, of course, SAVE meets every Saturday at the Denny's on Sunset Boulevard, and I know you welcome people to come over and make contributions.
Yes, we do.
So, I mean, that's something for anyone to think about on any given Saturday. You meet at 1 o'clock, don't you? Isn't that it?
1 o'clock, yes.
Well,
there's like 3 or 4 Denny's on Sunset Boulevard, but we're on the one near KTLA.
Oh, near KTLA. Well, okay, well, that pretty much explains it all. So anyone who wants to know more about SAVE and what they're doing, and have you decided yet what the acronym stands for?
You know what? You gave suggestions last Sunday, but we're still trying to decide upon it. And Francisco is kind of loath to lose the term substitute yet, because there's so many factors that are happening right now with all the RIF teachers, all these contract teachers that are now being forced to become substitute teachers instead of having their usual calling because of what's happening within the district and within UTLA. A reduction in force where they got their pink slips.
Well, we could have a very long discussion. In fact, we could use up the whole show just describing the fate of substitute teachers and how it's progressively moved along over the last 2 years to where what was once not necessarily the most desired career, but a career possibility with retirement and benefits included, it's now reduced to just a roulette wheel. You hope there's a day of work.
Yeah, well, we've been considered like bottom feeders for a long time, even though every student usually ends up with like 2 years of having the substitutes in their life throughout the school year. So we're not a small factor in these children's lives.
So over the course of 12 years of education, you're going to have 2 years of substitutes?
Yes.
Oh, so what's...
And most of us are very well aware of how to deal with these students and can walk into a classroom, catch the climate, see what is what we're expected to do, and even go beyond that.
You know, that amounts
to students' needs.
What, 7% of your total education, public education?
Oh, you did the math on it.
Well, it's just a rough calculation. I mean, I'm looking at that and saying it's at least 7.5%, 8% of your total education.
Yeah.
That's not a factor that you can take lightly.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're like 10% of the membership of UTLA.
Yeah, and something that most people don't understand, because when you hear this ridiculous talk about these well-paid teachers who get to enjoy a rather leisurely life, take a look at these substitutes. No one teaches well under duress of the threat of survival.
No.
I mean, if you don't know where the rent's from or you know, anything related to that, all the other expenses incumbent upon you just in getting by day to day, it's sort of hard to go into a classroom, divorce yourself from that, focus on instruction and curriculum and deliver it in the most effective way you can, and retain all the patience necessary, which would tax an angel, to not walk out.
Well, it's called flexibility.
Okay, we'll use that word, because the other words that I had weren't as nice.
What were your words?
Nah, you don't want to hear them. Kill radio.
Not fit for a radio?
Listen, I already purged the profanity out of all the alternate names for your acronym. You know, that was a massive effort on my part right there. So you don't want to get me tracked into that again.
Well, we're still trying to work on that, but it seems like daily save kind of is morphine.
Well, actually, you should be dispensing morphine at the school site.
LAUSD seems to be better at dispensing morphine.
Well, you know why they can't dispense morphine, don't you? It's not what you think. It's not the legal issue. It's the fact that they fired all the nurses.
I thought they kind of wanted to keep everybody where they were functioning.
Yeah, so, you know, there's so little in the way of on-site health care available to kids that, come on.
And now they're trying to get teachers to give injections.
Including injections.
Yes.
Yeah, now,
and any teacher, I would refuse to do that. My son is diabetic.
Oh yeah, I agree with you. But let me ask my companion here, Bennett. How would you feel about knowing that one of your students needs a little service from you? That is, you need to put an 18-gauge needle on a 3-mil syringe, draw a medication up, and when you're done with that, change the needle to a 22-gauge, and then do an intramuscular injection.
I would refuse, because I could have a lawsuit against me if anything went wrong. I am not a healthcare professional.
I would do exactly the same thing. I'd refuse. That wouldn't be in the scope of my job.
How about if they told you it is now going to be part of your job?
Well, then they're going to have to give me special training.
How about some special money?
Well, same thing.
Yeah, I mean, really. So it's this isn't just us. This is a common sense issue.
Uh-huh.
I mean, isn't it scary enough that, for instance, you may have a student that has a form of ADHD or some similar malady who requires polypharmacy? In other words, there's multiple medications, maybe 3 or 4 they have to take during the day. The scheduling of those medications is important. Making sure that you're giving the right amount of the right medication is important. And now that's on your shoulders.
Well,
what the worst part of it is LAUSD is willing to put all those students and teachers at risk to save money.
Tell me about it. Well, you know,
doesn't sound right to me.
Yeah, and you know, and Bennett thrives on one thing: common sense. So he's not going to gild the lily for you or anything like, or dramatize it. This isn't histrionic. It's just a case of it's stupidity, uh-huh. And stupidity at a lethal level.
Yes.
But anyway, Linda, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Not at this moment.
All right. Well, thank you
for having me on the air.
Oh, we're grateful for you to call in, because we would never have touched all this information. It just wouldn't happen.
Right.
It would have just gone by, and that's why we want to encourage anyone. Don't think that what you're thinking is irrelevant or silly. Call in. You're probably thinking about something that none of the rest of us have thought of. And if you bring it up, then it's not just you knowing it, we all know it then.
Well, I know I'm one of many that is grateful for the work that you guys are doing to get information out to the public on what's going on with education?
Well, you know, the thing is this. I can't think of another format on the air right now where you can call in and speak uncensored. We should all be doing our best to build Kill Radio. I mean, there's some wonderful programming here in the way of alternative music that you're not going to hear anywhere else in L.A. But this can be a public information service, too, where you know what's going on in your community and you know where you need to stand up and do something about it. But that's only going to happen if people listen, if they call in, and they share what they know.
Well, thank you. And thank you for the good work you guys are all doing.
Glad to do it.
And I will continue listening.
Thank you very much. Kill
thank
Radio
you.
Appreciates
Bye.
It, too.
All right, that was Linda Everhart. If you happen to be listening, we are now waiting for John Amani to call in. While we're waiting, we'll return to some music.
Some people stay far away from the door if there's a chance of it opening up. They hear a voice in the hall outside and hope that it just passes by. Some people live with the fear of a touch and the anger of having been a fool. They will not listen to anyone, so nobody tells them a lie.
Oh, Mark, please.
Yeah, you're speaking to him.
I'm John Imani.
John Imani. John, thank you for calling in. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen, but we've mentioned a couple times that you were on, and we've discussed a number of issues which surround what you're doing. Now, I can't even begin to go through all the stuff that you're involved in. Can you kind of give us an idea of the programs that you're currently participating in and what they do?
Yeah, my major activity right now is with the organization called Revolutionary Autonomous Communities Los Angeles.
RACLA?
RACLA, yes, sir.
Okay, and that's a series of organizations acting as one, or how does that go?
It's actually a unified organization. It began as a coalition following the police riot in MacArthur Park, May 8, 2007, when the Los Angeles Police Department expressed a political opinion on immigration by telling people that if they dare stand up for their human rights, that they would smite them down. And to their credit, they did exactly that. They beat up a whole bunch of folks. My granddaughter, who was 7 years old at the time, and myself were there, and we were close enough to smell the tear gas and get a little eye watering and that sort of thing. But naturally, I tried to keep her the best out the way. But
they roughed up a couple of reporters too, as I remember.
Yeah, but you know, the hell with the reporters. I'm thinking about the people. The people. I mean, it got news because of the reporters, but there were lots of people, average, ordinary, working people, who were beaten up by the cops because they dared to protest for their human rights. And because of that, what happened was that a group of probably 12 to 13 radicals formed together to talk about ways that in which we could demonstrate that the cops had not ran the radicals and the pro-migrant workers out of the park.
Now, by radical in this context, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, you know, like to try and change this damn system. That's about as radical as it can get.
Yeah, you see, we're not talking about bombers. We're talking about people that are trying to change the system.
No, you're talking about people who are going about trying to construct a vehicle whereby people can help people to, number one, to survive during these troubled times of ours, but then number two, to educate ourselves as to how it is that we might go about, you know, like erecting a different way of working. A different way of thinking, a different way of being with each other. And these are the fundamentals of a new society. So, yes, this organization is dedicated to the proposition that what's needed is a brand new form of society that has hitherto not existed.
So you're talking about throwing out the current model entirely, not just modifying it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if there's something good to be saved, then people ought to step forward to the plate and demonstrate what they feel is the better things about capitalism that we can save. For myself, I can't see a damn thing.
Well, explain this to me, John. You're using the word capitalism. Is there any really possible successful interaction between capitalism and the idea of democracy?
Yeah. I mean, what Marx did was that Marx took it, he analyzed that system. He took it, he broke that system down. He broke that system down so as to show its fundamental characteristics, its fundamental tendencies. And the fundamental characteristics of capital are number one, to expel labor power from the workforce by replacing them with machines. Number two, to push the working day to increase what do you call it, the amount of relative surplus value. That is, you know, by increasing the tempo of the workday. Absolute surplus value being increasing the length of the workday. But by increasing the tempo, by increasing the pace, by increasing the strain upon the worker, then surplus value, that is, unpaid labor, can more of that can be gotten out of the worker. And that's exactly what's going on today.
So is there any notion of, even in theory, of a benign form of capitalism, or is that just trickery?
Well, you know, I mean, if you take his fundamental proposition, Mark, you know, his fundamental proposition is that I'm going to hire you. The only reason I'm going to hire you is because I'm going to make money off of you. If I'm not going to make money off of you, I'm going to fire you. So a man's relation to man at that particular point, you know, is nothing but an out-and-out pecuniary relationship. And not only a pecuniary relationship, it's an exploitative pecuniary relationship. It's exploitative because, like, again, the only reason why somebody hires you is such that they can make a profit off you. If they can't make a profit out you go. And that's what's going on today. What's going on right now is that there have been so many people kicked out of the workforce that the workers who are left are being put the strain on, being forced with what do they call it, speed ups, increased tempo, you know, and they're being driven harder and for less money. And nobody wants to complain. Why? Because if you do, you're showing the door. And if you're showing the door, where are you? You're out there with the rest of us.
So there's really no such thing as a fair day's wage for a fair day's labor anymore.
No, there isn't. No, and to be honest with you, there never was. A fair day's labor for a fair day's wage would mean that whatever I put out, I get back. I mean, minus deductions for people who are for social needs, for people who can't work, for the infants and children and old folks, the people in the hospitals and stuff like that. But whatever a worker puts in, that worker ought to get back. Now, that's not communism. That's socialism at that particular point.
Right.
Well, with communism, or what happens is that the conjunction between effort and reward is broken. You know, in other words, there is no longer a direct relationship between the work that you put out and the effort and the reward that you get back. It's the difference between
off the stick then.
Yeah, it's the difference between from each according to his abilities to each according to his needs. And that's communism, and with socialism being from each according to his abilities, to each according to his work. Now, in coming up out of a capitalist society, that last proposition to each according to his work will have to remain in place for a certain amount of time because, like, what we're dealing with, people coming out of capitalism. I'm sorry, what we will be dealing with are people with PTSD, capitalistic PTSD, post-traumatic syndrome disorder. We've been taught not to work. We've been taught to take advantage of each other. We've been taught to cheat, to sneak, to lie. All of these things, you know, and all of these things, you're like, really, you know, I mean, there's an old, what do you call it, aphorism, throwing it on off into the ash can of history. That's what we want to do with capitalism. There is no benign, benevolent capitalism.
Okay,
it's a lie. It's a joke. It's a fabrication. You know, I mean, today, they're telling you what? Don't tax the rich. Why? Because they won't give us jobs. You know? They ain't got no damn jobs in the first.
Yeah, supposedly, right? They're the creator of employment.
Yeah. You know, that there's an old saying. I never got a job from a poor man. Yeah, but you never got a job from anybody who didn't take advantage of you.
You know, since you mentioned
take a portion of your labor.
Yeah, you mentioned history in this. According to your group, the way you see things, what's the point of inception of this? Now, I know this is a rhetorical question.
Yes. go right ahead.
Where does this all begin? I mean, how far back does this go, the development in the system that we currently have? And again, I know I'm asking a rhetorical question, but I don't think too many people think about this.
And I'm afraid that I didn't quite follow your question. You mean, how far back does the evil in capitalism go back?
Yeah, historically speaking, where would you – there are various theories on this, but where do you date it from?
Well, I date it from its inception. It began in two different sources. The first one was usurious capital, when a person would lend you some money and expect interest on that money. I mean, what you did was you got the money from him, you went out and bought some tools, you made some groceries, and you came back to him and gave him back his money and some of the groceries that you produced. The second part was merchant capital, wherein they took and they sold beads to the Indians, and took over Manhattan Island. Now that's just an aphorism, but it is nonetheless, in legend there is fact.
Well, and contrary to what people think, just in that frame of reference, mm-hmm. the Indians didn't welcome them. The Indians didn't want them on their territory at all. They wanted them to stay out on their ships. The only way they'd get in there is they would promise one tribe that they would help them against another. But by and large, the Indians up and down the Americas did not want those ships on their land.
I think you're exactly correct about that.
I mean, there's no doubt about it.
I'll tell you what it reminds me of. You want to hear what it reminds me of? There's a group of islands that's in the Indian Ocean. It's called the Andaman Islands.
Right.
A-N-D-A-M-A-N, Andaman Islands, right? And it's closer to Africa than it is to India. But, nonetheless, like during the tsunami of 2004 or 5, whichever one it was, 2004 or 5, the huge tsunami, that there were there were waves that hit that place as well. But I want to go back just a little bit before that. Right before that, there were three Indian fishermen, East Indian fishermen, who had inadvertently gotten drunk and who had fell asleep and who landed on their property. Now, they warned people that they don't want anything at all to do with the outside world. So what did they do? They killed those people, right? Okay, so the helicopter came to get the bodies. When the helicopter came to get the bodies, they shot at it with bow and arrows. Those bodies are still on the beach as a warning not to come and bother us. Now, let me just go back to right after the tsunami. Right after the tsunami, the world, it may even have been the Red Cross, sent helicopters over there to drop supplies because these islands had been hit. When they sent the helicopter over there to drop the supplies, these people aren't, quote-unquote, Indian givers, right? They shot at the helicopters, too, at those, too. They don't want to be bothered. And there's nothing wrong with that. If those people want to be left alone, I say leave them the hell alone. Unfortunately, what happened in 1492 and thereafter was that they sent soldiers over there, with ruthless soldiers, with guns, horses, the things that the Indians, indigenous people had never seen before. And they conquered these people, and they brutalized these people. And, while at the same time they were brutalizing the people from Africa, it's the same old story. Like, wherever capitalism has been, capitalism has done nothing but destroy. It terraforms the economy to fit its own needs. For example, like in Africa, what the British did in order to really break down the barriers in Africa was to replace an in-kind tax, that is a tax, that's paid in whatever type of food products that you're growing and that sort of stuff, with a monetary tax. In other words, now you had to go and work for somebody in order to earn some money. You couldn't just go on out there and grow your own food and then take and give half of it, a third of it, whatever it is, like, to the British as your taxes. You had to pay in the currency of the realm, in pounds, sterlings, or what have you, whatever it was, And so it terraforms the earth. It has terraformed the earth, not just in Africa, not just in South America. It has terraformed the earth worldwide to fit its needs. And in that, it has destroyed the local indigenous economies, economies in which people never starved. I mean, it's crazy to think that people could starve with all of the animals in the jungle, all of the food that you could grow, all of the food that grows wildly, But they went and they changed the whole economy around to fit their needs, not to fit the needs of the indigenous people who lived there.
Well, that's a pretty thorough explanation.
It's about as quick as I can do in about 2 minutes because I've got to leave out here to go to the food program. If you don't mind, I'd like to mention our food program.
Yeah, in fact, I was hoping that you were going to do that. I was going to bring that up. Can you describe that for us briefly?
Yeah, I'll get to it as quickly as I can. For over three and a half years, 3 years and 9 months now, REC has put on a food program where we go around to, as a matter of fact, I just came from Santa Monica. I go to a church that gets bread. And whatever they don't use, they give to us. So that's my job every Sunday. I go to Santa Monica, pick up the bread. Other comrades go to on Saturday and Friday, go to pick up stuff from other food banks or from the green grocers downtown. And we bring that together on Sunday morning, every Sunday morning, rain, shine, heat, whatever, snow. I mean, if it does snow in L.A., we'll be there. And we put together bundles feeding approximately 80 to 100 people every week. And the great thing about REC is this, is that we might have started off with those 12 or 13 radicals, right? I think that there's two of the original radicals who were left. But now with 25, 30 strong, and the overwhelming majority of people that we have were people who initially came to the food program because they needed the food. People who saw what we were doing say, hey, if these guys can do that, I can do it too. And so they come every single Sunday. This is what REC is composed of now. REC is composed of the community. There is no differentiation between the people who started REC and the people who are in the community. The people who we started out to serve, but the people who learned that what we had to do was not to serve them, but to allow ourselves to serve ourselves. And that's what that it is. And that's no greater compliment to any revolutionary organization, I don't think.
Yeah, and in doing so, you serve the same base that we do. You know, I'm sure the families and the kids of those families are the very same ones that we see in our classrooms.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. Absolutely. And my hat's off to good teachers everywhere because I used to be one myself.
Well, thank you, sir. One other thing, before you depart, I wanted to ask you, you have my email address. In fact, we have each other's email address. Would it be possible for you to send some information to me that I can feature here on Kill Radio?
Believe me, Mark, I won't be able to do it now, obviously, because I'm leaving out as we speak. But
but when you have the chance.
This afternoon, my friend, you'll get it. And then, Mark, thank you for your time, man. And I appreciate this. And I wish I could have chatted longer, but, you know, like, hey, that's the way my Sundays go.
You used your time very economically.
All right, my brother, you take care.
All right, you too. So long now.
Take care.
All right, everyone, that was John Amani. We're going to return to some music. Well, we're going to return to a little music now, unless we have another caller. I believe that John Adams, Cindy might be calling in. We'll see. If he doesn't call in, then we're pretty much toward the end of the show. So thank you for listening, and let's see what happens.
I know you're thinking of somebody else, someone who hurt you, but I'm not above making up for the love you've been denying you could ever feel. I'm not above doing anything to restore your faith if I can. Some people see through the eyes of the old before they ever get a look at the young. I'm only willing to hear you cry because I am an innocent man. I am an innocent man. Oh, yes, I am.
Okay, hello, John?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is John Adams that, as I mentioned to you earlier, might be phoning in. You're still on Kill Radio. And, John, I know you've been exchanging a lot of information with me lately, and you're involved with the food revolution, for one thing, not as an in-depth member, but certainly as a promoter. And there are some of the things that you've been bringing up. Would you care to elucidate a little on those?
Well, I just think it's interesting you had to say John Armani because I think it's a good segue about the two things I want to discuss. And the second would be about UTLA corruption. But the first would be about, he just brought up the issue of food. And I'm sending you this long email, by the way, I'm working on. But there's Jenny Cook, who's in charge of lunchforfood.org. She's got quite a few organizations that she's working with in and around Los Angeles, and she even knows a board member.
And I have heard from her. She wants to do the show.
Right. So I think we're starting to, this is starting to come to fruition here. But just some of the organizations she works with is L.A. Farmers Market, Jefferson High School, Root Down L.A. on Facebook, South L.A. Green Roundtable, the Accelerated School, the Garden School Foundation, and she volunteers every Thursday at 24th Street Elementary in Los Angeles. So seems like we're making some progress in this endeavor.
And exactly how does she relate to the food revolution?
She actually, I think, was doing that stuff before even Jamie Oliver showed up about sugar in the school's lunch, and she'd done demonstrations. But he, of course, brought it national, international attention. So she's kind of a forerunner of food revolution.
Is there anyone else within that organization that you interact with or have familiarity with?
No, but she might be our. She obviously has contact and knows these people, so she could be our.
Yeah, this sounds like, you know, a promising contact there. And again, for people who don't think about it or realize it, the people that they cater to are the same ones that, well, they're the parents of the children that are in our classes more often than not. You know, things being the way they are.
Health is the beginning of a proper education, and also just if people can control their kids' foods at their school, then they control.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that people overlook is that the brain consumes most of your blood sugar. You know, if you don't have it, then how can you expect your brain to operate proficiently?
Well, they've done studies where they've gone into prisons in England and they've given them vitamins, and the vitamins goes right down. And they've had other studies where they've given kids nutrition and their IQs go up. So the groundwork for these studies have already been accomplished, and There's information out there showing that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're sitting there thinking about your empty stomach, it's kind of hard to focus on anything else.
Right, but if you're also feeding off of a bad food, I mean, what are going to be the results? And we're seeing that. I mean, I had students at Garfield with type 2 diabetes, and they were only 17 years old. So, I mean, that's all food. There's no way you can get type 2 diabetes.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, if the object of your diet is to test the durability of your pancreas, then you're not going to do too well at anything else.
And then you can add to the mix of organic versus chemical or pesticide-sprayed foods where you have these estrogen-producing chemicals, mimicking chemicals, and it's known that men in America, by and large, tend to have less sperm count because of all the pesticides.
Yeah, they're estrogen-dominant because of the isomers, that the chemical equivalents of estrogen.
Right. So what that can do to kids' IQ. And then I forget the exact number, but 61% of all Americans, something like that, have pharmaceutical drugs in their system. They're getting from the drinking water because so many people in this country take pharmaceuticals that when they urinate, it ends up somehow in the water supply, and then you reintroduce it to the body through your drinking water.
Yeah,
but it's somebody
right.
somebody else's pharmaceuticals, not your own. You know, you're getting somebody else's.
Well, we could go on and on about this. You know,
right.
The polycarbonates in containers, which leach into the
right.
actual liquids, and of course, mm-hmm. those are estrogen mimickers too. I mean,
sure.
the whole list of things that feed animals are injected with that don't depart from their tissues just because they've been slaughtered. So they get the
right.
chemicals onto us. And we're not even talking about genetically modified organisms, which there are no serious studies on how they will affect us in the future. And those few studies that are out there aren't pointing toward good results.
Right, right.
I mean, you take something like, what's the most common one now? Soy. Soy isn't digestible for humans.
Right.
We can't, it's basically like poisoning ourselves.
Right, yeah. Some people think soy's healthy, but there's another book called The Caveman Diet, and humans are really supposed to just eat meat and things you can pick off a plant. Anything that's, agriculturally based, with a few exceptions, is all these grains introduced to the diet just tend to wreak havoc on the body.
Well, I think, you're relating to the latest research, which says that there are no exceptions there. No grain was inherently in the diet of developing primitive man, simply because they had no way to prepare it.
Right.
Yeah, they certainly consumed far more starches than we thought of in the past, but those were, you know, vegetable starches, not grain starches.
Well, and the starches were probably more fats. I mean, you got fats from the animal, and the animal's eating the grass, and they're ingesting the positive fats into the diet. But anyway, I guess where we're going with this is that all this is talking about real reform from, you know, from the ground up and treating the child, you know, holistically. And Lenny mentioned somebody in New York who told the mayor of New York, I will take on these kids, but you've got to let me have them from, you know, I think preschool on up. I have to have total control. I have to control their diets, control their education. You know, so it's that view that we need to take for these LA Unified kids to give them a fighting chance.
Yeah, I don't think you'd have too many people who would argue against what you're saying there, except those people who are currently in control of nutrition as it appears in schools, whose bottom line is doing it as cheaply as possible.
Cheap as possible, and Jamie Oliver used the term on The Daily Show, backhanded procurements. He was insinuating a corruption in the school district, so and something we've certainly discussed. But so there might be a lot of reasons why they're keeping out besides just the low cost of food, and I think he proved that you can do it cheaply, so I don't think that's an issue. But that's something you may want to ask Jenny Cook.
A pertinent question, for sure.
Right. And then you have the issue of, well, can each school grow its own vegetables? Because at 24th Street, she has her own vegetable garden for the students. And I know Venice High School had it at one time, but maybe that's something we can push towards LU5 to every school should have its own community garden.
Some of those gardens are still out there, in fact. You know, just driving around in my neighborhood in Gardena, I see some of them at definitely at the high school and middle school level, but also in some of the elementaries. And it seems like somehow or another they're still relatively well tended to, but I don't think those, where they fit into their programs, I don't think that necessarily gets, in fact, I'm sure it doesn't get the emphasis that it should merit.
Right. But, I mean, they need to grow enough, of course, or maybe supplement a little bit outside from a farmer's market, organic farmer's market, or farmer, but go ahead and supplement the school's cafeteria and the kids' diet.
Yeah.
Plus, it's a learning exercise for students to know where food comes from.
You're
and to grow it themselves.
Right.
And, I mean, it just, this whole thing snowballs to a whole different paradigm of way as students should be treated.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, Mark, I wanted to go on regress to UTLA corruption. I wrote an article, as you might know, called The Cozy Relationship of UTLA and LUSD, and I know you guys touched on that. But Lenny, I quote Lenny in the article, and he talks about how these people work for us. We're paying them. But one lady, let's see, what was her name? I can't believe I forgot it. But she just completely pull apart in an about-face with Lenny. He was supposed to get a job based on seniority, and she says, we'll never stand for that, you know, and then the last minute she completely flips and lets somebody who's not even credentialed in that area to fill the post, and Lenny was, not ever allowed to take that particular post. And then she was supposed to be helping me with payroll issues in December, and she says, we can't. I talked to the district, they said you have an attorney. I did have an attorney at that time. She just made the whole thing up. Either they I told her I don't have an attorney, but she wanted to believe the district over me, or if she even heard that from the district. And she said she got through an email, so this is only 3 days after it happened. So I said, send me the email. She goes, I erased the email. So now I have the district suing me for back pay when it could have probably been resolved through the union, but the union just did not want to help me. And then we go back to a guy named Bruce Williams, who's the East Area rep. My work was blocked for 14 months out of retaliation. And then he basically helped the district along with that. And then there was a retaliatory discipline meeting against me, completely fraudulent. Our principal Rudolph C. Sandoval was actually time card cheating. He was never at the school, hardly. And then, anyway, so long story short, Bruce Willis was actually facilitating this retaliatory disciplinary meeting against me, while at the same time his district was blocking my employment, and the union was doing nothing. They wouldn't give me any money. They wouldn't help me in whatever way. Thank God I won it, though, through PERB, Public Employees Relations Board. So I know that, you know, David Garcia or some of our people have contact with the union, but I would hope that they would get rid of these people. Paula Parr is already retired. She's moonlighting with UTLA. She was a horrific, we know her through Garfield. She was our UTLA rep, and she did a horrific job. I mean, she was just basically working for the district. So I don't know if you have any comments on that, but that was certainly my experience.
Well, you know, yours is an old story, and what I mean by that is many people have suffered similar circumstances.
Right.
Lenny
Eisenberg would be a
prime example. Definitely, and he's mentioned his. But the difference is this. At least you pulled a few victories out of the fire in your case, whereas for most of the people...
Yeah, but that was in spite of... In spite of UTLA, not because of UTLA.
Right, in spite of the union, you managed to save yourself.
Right.
In my experience as a teacher, I took on the district at least three times and prevailed on all three. And I can tell you right now, in the case of all three of them, I did the first time around, while we still had a real union that actually fought for you, it would have been, you know, back around 1990. Yeah, they did help me. In fact, the
right.
end result of that was the principal that I was dealing with wound up being fired. She lost her
wow.
job. I was told either you quit or you're going to have to offer this man a blanket apology publicly and hope that he forgives you. And she refused to do it, so she quit. But,
wow.
But since then, that's all over. The other battles I've had with them, I had to carry on myself because any contact with the union proved fruitless, and I read that right away and just said, okay, you're on your own. Take care of it. So I survived to retirement, but based upon my own wits, not upon any help from the union. And one of the things that I've tried to emphasize to others, although I know it's being the tragic messenger, bad news, I don't know that if the union continues to exist after the next 3 years, that it is reformable. If it is reformable, it is not reformable from within. It needs to be replaced or at the very least have an entirely new membership in leadership. Otherwise, there's no such thing as bringing it around. It will
well,
not.
Well, yeah, I would agree with you there, and I disagree with David Garcia because I think he's more pro let's keep the union together. I think UTLA can be broken up like the Teamsters. The union, I mean, districts should be broken up into different mini districts. We hire all the bureaucrats, new bureaucrats, let parents decide who's going to control their schools. And the union, UTLA should stay in place, but in the sense that it's a Teamster-like where it's represented by different mini districts or different chapters and go from there. Because I think it's just too corrupt. You've got these people who are actually aiding and abetting the district against its own members.
You're absolutely right. You know, and I agree with you 100%. And, you know, as a comparison, if this were the Longshoremen Union, the district would be shaking in fear.
Right, right.
Yeah, because they know that they would take them to the wall and spend whatever it took across the nation to strike them down, even
right.
if we're on the other side of the coast. You know,
right,
that's all
right.
there is to it.
Right.
No. What we're getting is not service. We're getting a disservice.
Right.
And
that
so far, the new leadership
yeah.
has not demonstrated any willingness to change that. It's the same old thing. They may change the wording a little. They may change the personnel a little. But what's really different? Nothing at all. We're seeing the same results. The same jobs are threatened. The same people are threatened. I mean, what more is there to it?
Right.
So I'm in agreement with you 100% on that. It's getting everybody on board, you know, on the good ship reality.
Right, right, right.
That's really what it comes down to.
Right. So this will be, you know, ground up demonstrations, though, I think, would be the only thing in place. And I sent you, as you know, and I'm saying this to this Jenny Cook, but the Dolores Elementary protest in 2008 where they got rid of a lemon principal who had already been at two other schools, and nobody wanted her, so they shipped her to this third school, and she just started causing all these problems, and the parents just would not put up with it. And they opened up their own website, and they had the media there. The media came six different times and did interviews. But that's what it's going to take to get the right food into the to each school and the right principals and administrators, because teachers take all the blame, but a bad administrator can do far more havoc than a bad teacher. And I would argue that 85 to 90% of all teachers are good teachers, and even the 10% can be retrained or peer pressured into something. But if you get a bad principal, forget about it. I mean, all sorts of nasty things can happen and do happen.
Well, in reference to what you're saying, as you know, we're doing our best to start a successful interaction with the Food Revolution or any related groups. We're doing our best to do the same with RAC, which is one of the most progressive groups in the Los Angeles area, and we're absolute advocates.
I'm sorry, Mark, who's the last group you mentioned?
RAC.
Who's that?
John Amani, who was just on.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Right.
And we're doing whatever we can to promote student boycotts.
Right.
Hurt them. Take away their ADA.
Right.
Yeah. Cut off their food supply.
Right.
more or less.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think this is maturing, and this is starting to. We're seeing the connection here between all these groups, which are actually all do have a. I mean, Jenny Cook's been, I guess, fighting for a number of years to get sugar out of LA Unified Schools, and so we're starting to see these other pioneers, and hopefully we can join forces and push this thing forward.
Oh, I think you're right.
And she's on public radio too, so or has been one of her articles. So I think we can diversify into other media, and I certainly hope your well-written article gets picked up by another magazine. In this case, I'm sending it to this public radio station she was on.
Well, let's hope that somewhere along the line the blackout comes to an end.
Right, exactly. Yeah, then we want to appeal, I guess, on air that I did, through a shared email with you, we did approach the Daily Breeze, who I think is also, there are another magazine out there, I forget which one. They have different names, like one or two different names.
In the old days, and it's not that long ago, we could have probably gotten in touch with the LA Weekly, and they would have done something with it. But after their various exchanges in ownership, they're not what they used to be. In fact, they're kinder to the district than they are to any teacher groups.
Well, yeah, they did an article on David Tokoski, who was he was on the school board, as you probably remember. And he became a real, in my opinion, a real sickle fan for the district. And they just let him go on and on about, the kind of, he's taking the district's view of things. And
oh, yeah.
Nothing was critical about it at all.
They went on Yoli Flores, too, in which they did nothing but flatter her.
Right. I could talk about her because she's the one that took over after David. And I sent her a certified mail about problems they're having at Garfield, and nothing was done. In fact, we had a teacher's car stolen twice by the same student, and the then principal, Guadalupe Paramo, allowed the student to stay at the school after he committed grand theft auto, not once but twice.
Yeah, great.
And we had a dean there, John Benson, who was excellent. He got there like at some ungodly hour, like 4:30 in the morning. Mornings was his thing. He got there like his first one at school, and she ironically was late all the time.
Yeah, well, the tales that any of these schools or middle schools could tell.
And then I can go on and on, but basically, there was no discipline at our school hardly at all. Not because of her. She let two students fight and come back. She defied the one-fight policy, and so we had John Benson quit, the one I just mentioned, mid-year, and he just took early retirement, basically. He died a little bit after that, but basically just retired. He was disgusted. And so, long story short, she had just become a high school director. And then the district, she was a horrible principal. Then the district promotes her as a high school director. Go figure.
That's their way of handling those people who prove to be incompetent. Promote them.
Well, yeah. Well, not just no. This was Romer's poster child for school reform. And he brought ABC News there, and she was doing all these wonderful things. When in fact, none of it was true. And any credit you could take was due to teachers' efforts. So anyway, my long story short. Bad discipline, so I think a freshman figured out there was no discipline because the new principal had just taken over. He was a little better. Anyway, so a freshman burned down the historic Garfield Auditorium, causing ultimately $42 million in damage. Certainly a $42 million to rebuild.
Mm.
So I think they added some stuff after with the extra $12
million. Yeah.
So I would kind of blame her in direct or indirectly for the $30 million fire. So David Tokoski told me a complaint about her were a diatribe. So here's a $30 million diatribe.
Well,
it's unbelievable.
John, I know you could go on and on.
I know.
We're coming into the show, but I definitely want to thank you for calling us in and sharing that ridiculous information with us.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, it defies the imagination.
Well, and it's going back to Yoli Flores that, I guess you're saying the LA Weekly was very kind to her, but I don't have any kind thoughts. I think she's just another one of these bureaucrats who just keep the powers that in people in power that shouldn't be there in the first place.
Oh yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah.
But
okay,
anyway,
I'll let you go, and
we'll stay in touch.
I'm sending this email, and I think Jenny Cook's got a couple organizations, and we're going to start networking with all these people.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, thanks, Mark. Appreciate your time.
Have a good one, John.
Bye bye.
All right, if you're listening, you're still on Kill Radio. We're basically closing out. We've had three speakers today, John Amani, Linda Everhart, and John Adams. If you happen to be listening, I'm sure you profited by it. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again, or hear from you again, hopefully, next week.